Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, the place to drop your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. I know people are very excited about the NBA Combine that has come and gone. People are still reacting to us about the NBA lottery and what it means for the NBA draft. So whatever you have for us, even if you want to talk about free agency, hit us up at 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you. Locked On Bulls, today's episode is sponsored by Hotels.com, Untuckit, and Grip 6 Belts. Matt, with that, how are you? How's the weekend? How did the weekend treat you? Have you changed any of your thoughts or had any developing thoughts about what the Bulls should do at number 7?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? I mean, no real change. I kind of still am feeling that the Bulls are going to be, if they don't trade their pick at 7, looking at one of a collection of guys, including Kobe White, Cam Reddish, and maybe one of the wings, if they fall, either Culver or DeAndre Hunter. I guess overall, I'm just feeling a little more positive about the Bulls after that disappointing draft lottery result Tuesday night. Having come off of watching the series finale of Game of Thrones last night and being remarkably disappointed, even as low as my expectations were watching the final season, you know, our expectations for the Bulls as a fan base tend to be low in this rebuild so far. My expectations for the Game of Thrones final season were lower, and I still walked away disappointed last night. So I guess when conceptualizing everything that is important to me in my life over the last handful of years, Bulls, less disappointing than Game of Thrones. So I guess I'm trying to start my new week on a fresh thought that, hey, the Bulls are a dumpster fire, but could be worse.
At least you got a baseball team worth watching.
That's true.
I mean, the Sox,
man. That's true.
Man.
Thank God for that. And we have Magic Johnson entertaining us to no end. Did you see him on First Take this morning?
Wow, yes, I did. What a clown move.
Finally, a reason to actually watch anything that terrible show does. Give Magic Johnson a platform to burn the Lakers to the ground.
I'll have to go back and watch the full interview, but I just had, before we had hopped on here, I had saw a few clips from him talking about Rob Pelinka and everything else that was going on there. So maybe we can talk about that on tomorrow's show when we both watch the interview in full. But man, I mean, good grab by First Take to get him as the first. This is really the first interview, the first TV show that he's done since he's had that hilarious press conference. So, yeah, the Lakers are a dumpster fire, but the only thing that pisses me off about the Lakers is the fact that they're still going to get somebody in free agency or via trade this summer. So it's not like they're going to come walking away empty-handed. As for the Bulls, there is a slight possibility the Bulls could walk away empty-handed this summer. And
Well, you know, Kawhi and or Kyrie not walking through that door for the Bulls.
Yeah, not coming anywhere near the Midwest for that fact. But let's talk a little bit about some of the updates that we've gotten from the NBA Combine, specifically talking about the Bulls here. I know one we did not mention on last week's show, but the Bulls invited one of the point guards that we talked about for the second round, maybe about a month ago or so, Shamori Pons from St. John's. I know they worked him out. I heard and saw from Darnell Mayberry that among the two sessions that the Bulls are going to run this week, Loyola's hero Clayton Custer is getting a workout. So
ramble on, baby.
So yeah, that's interesting. I thought Shamori Pons is a good one to work out too. That's the one that we talked about at 38, the pick at 38. Maybe Admiral Schofield there too. So maybe Carson Edwards as well. So it'll be interesting to see if the Bulls decide to work any of those guys out in the future and have interest in them in the second round. But I feel like there's a handful of guys that are going to be available at the late 30s that the Bulls should snag and be able to have take a flyer on or take a risk on.
Yeah, and when you talk about the Bulls having that pick at 38, and hopefully, despite all of the jokes at their expense that the fan base loves to make, actually, take a flyer on somebody and see if they can turn that second round pick into something valuable. Because as the Bulls fans who are more optimistic are trying to say, hey, just because we didn't get a top two pick or even a top three pick, it doesn't, it's not the end of the world. The Bulls have gotten solid players at seven over the last 2 years. And look at all of these stars that are still left playing in the two conference final series, and the fact that none of them outside of Damian Lillard, who was taken at six, are even, anywhere sniffing being top five draft picks, whether it's Giannis or Kawhi or Draymond Green. And hell, Draymond Green himself being a 35th overall pick and him looking like one of the most valuable pieces in either of these two conference final series, especially without Kevin Durant. Draymond Green has been balling. But the other funny thing is when, we've seen Jordan Bell get some more minutes in Kevin Durant's absence because the Warriors are kind of shorthanded. He, in their Game 3 victory, had like a sequence over the span of a couple minutes where he totally blew that wide open breakaway dunk, just bricked the dunk off the back iron, and then followed it up with like an insanely awesome two-handed flush where he just came flying in down the lane out of nowhere. And it was like a huge reaction from Bulls fans watching this game on Twitter, being like, oh, catch considerations fucked up. And then, oh man, that dunk catch considerations had was awesome.
Oh,
moral of the story, use your second round draft pick, Bulls.
I hope
please.
They do. And if they're not going to use the second round pick, use it for a reason as far as like moving up or acquiring a player or something, not
well
for cash.
We do know they love to trade them. And I mean, they can't move it for cash because they already have reached that,
the threshold
of amount of money that they can take in. So until the new fiscal year for the NBA starts on July 1st, So this includes any potential draft night trades or leading up to draft night trades that the Bulls might explore. They can't take in any more cash.
Let's go. So we're at least not trading the second round pick for cash. So that's a good thing. Beyond that, though, I mean, hopefully they can get a player that at least will help them solidify their bench and maybe a project there. But I mean, the names that we were talking about have been around the NCAA for a couple of years. So maybe Admiral Schofield, that's the guy I want them to take in the second round if he's still available at 38. But another prospect too that I think I'm pretty excited to talk about this week, Matt, is Sekou Doumbia, the international prospect, which I think he's been starting to get a lot of praise around Twitter. We're starting to see more clips be revealed about his game. He looks like a lot of fun, man, and the only thing I can say is he's a project, and he might be a guy that might not be developed for 3 or 4 years if the Bulls were to draft him at number 7. But I think the ceiling, the upside on him, I think could be pretty high. Just watching some of the film, he dropped 34 points in the game he just played this past weekend. So we can talk about him later in this week, but I'm very, very excited to see where he ends up and what he ends up being. The other thing I wanted to talk to you, Matt, about real quickly, and then we'll get to the first prospect we're going to talk about on the list of episodes. So every episode we're going to do at least one prospect breakdown, maybe two if it warrants it. But I want to talk to you about draft promises. I know we had mentioned this earlier last week, talking about Darius Garland potentially getting a draft promise from somebody. And now we're hearing that Coby White might have a draft promise. So first, let's start with Coby White. Who do you think gave him a draft promise? Do you think it might be the Bulls? I know reports are saying somewhere between 5 and 9 he thinks he's going to get drafted. What did you think about this situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that he and Darius Garland both seem to have left the combine with draft promises, and them being, you know, the second and third, or, you know, third and second, whichever order, as far as point guards at the top of this draft, because it seems also it's very clear at this point that the Grizzlies are set on and happy about taking Ja Morant with the second pick, and that they're not looking to trade it, and that Ja is their guy. So whereas obviously Zion is one, and we always knew that. In a draft class where Ja certainly seemed like the second highest, most exciting star potential kind of player, the other two players that we've heard having draft promises, or at least rumored draft promises, are also point guards in, you know, the top five, maybe top seven range, where most people, I think, would agree that there's kind of some reaching going on. Because those point guards, you know, one of them had a very short college career, 5 games before getting hurt, dealing with a meniscus, which is always risky. And then Coby White, who, you know, was certainly impressive taking over North Carolina's offense as a rookie, or as a freshman, I should say. But that certainly doesn't necessarily scream top 10 potential, which just kind of goes to show you just how weak overall this class is. You know, it's surprising that a player that has the kind of two-way potential and ceiling that Jarrett Culver has, we haven't heard anything about Jarrett Culver getting a draft promise from anybody. So as far as who we think that draft promise might be from when it comes to Coby White, if you do in fact believe that Darius Garland came from the Lakers because he is a Clutch Sports client with Rich Paul and LeBron James and that whole crew, then either Coby White's draft promise comes from Phoenix, who certainly also look like a team that is in need of a point guard, or it came from the Bulls. I have no idea which one it might be.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because even if you take the Lakers out of the picture and Darius Garland's not, wasn't promised by them, and they end up taking a wing, then that means it's clear that it could have, it probably was Phoenix or Chicago that offered both of these draft promises. And look, I wouldn't even disclude the idea that one team offered a draft promise to two guys, you know, whether it was, you know, they're specifically looking for a point guard and they offered Darius Garland and Coby White with two draft promises, and whichever guy falls to them, then that's the guy that they'll take. I find it very bizarre, and I don't know if I like this trend of guys getting draft promises and all of a sudden leaving the NBA combine. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world, but I think we could see a growing trend of guys starting to get promises somewhere between, like we're seeing with Coby White, 5 to 9, somewhere in this lottery, and we don't necessarily see this all the time. I mean, last year we saw it with Chandler Hutchison, and I feel like that was the first time that we really saw somebody leave the combine as early as they did, not interview with any teams and say, yeah, we got a draft promise from somebody, but we're not going to say who. And all of a sudden now it's back in a first round pick. Now this is leaking into the lottery. What do you think about this overall draft promise thing? Do you think it's going to become a problem?
I mean, I don't necessarily think it's a problem. And, you know, maybe it will take away some of the suspense and drama and excitement around the draft as far as that, you know, those great reveal moments of, oh my gosh, who's the team going to take? And now, even still, like, that's already kind of happened, and not because of draft promises, but because as a televised event, and it's also kind of started to happen with the NFL draft recently. The NFL and NBA drafts are such a huge event, and the immediacy of social media and these reporters who were making these tweets, it kind of has already started to lose some of that dramatic luster. So I like, to me, like, draft promises being rumored is not really going to hurt it all that much. But, you know, thinking back to the Bulls situation last year and the fact that Chandler Hutchison was rumored to have that promise all the way back at 22, it was kind of like a weird, a special scenario, like a special instance to me, because I don't think it was so much about we really like this kid and if he falls all the way to 22, we're going to take him. To me, it was, there was another element at play. And Chandler Hutchison is a Mark Bartlestein client, much like Michael Porter Jr., who was, you know, of course, always on the Bulls' radar, and certainly he was in and around Chicago a lot leading up to the draft. Certainly seemed like the Bulls would have been a happy landing spot for him as a Borrowstein client. And there was that whole story that maybe some people have forgotten about as far as who had access to those Michael Porter Jr. medicals and where exactly that came from, and the fact that it was the Bulls who were the team who had the most access to figuring out just what was going on with Michael Porter Jr. medically leading up to that draft last year. And maybe that there was some kind of deal, spoken or unspoken, about, you know, Bartlestein saying, we'll give you this access and information regarding my client, Michael Porter Jr. And in return, maybe when you get down to that 22nd pick from the Nico trade, if Chandler Hutchinson is on the board, you should take him. And it was sort of like an exchange of, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And so that's why I think in terms of that specific draft promise, it was like, it was just kind of fluky.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, with what you're saying. I think the Bulls situation was definitely different than maybe some of these other draft promises going on. Just because you brought Bartlestein up, I got to give you some of the new prospects that have signed with Priority Sports, just to put a little bit of anxiety in Chicago Bulls fans' blood before we get to the draft. Brandon Clark is part of Priority Sports now. He's from Gonzaga.
And I love Brandon Clark. I just don't really see where he fits into this roster right now.
Same. And a lot of people who've been watching college basketball all season have talked about Brandon Clark's ceiling being maybe the highest among any prospect in this outside of Zion. And The value there could be good. Like you said, though, I don't know where he really fits if the Bulls are excited about a guy like that, or maybe they move down.
Like you just said, maybe part of the plan, and I don't know how I'd feel about this, because as we were discussing on a recent episode last week, I'm still really high on Wendell Carter Jr. Maybe dangling Wendell Carter Jr. as part of a trade package to get a point guard would clear the way for a Markkanen, Brandon Clark front court, which, you know, as much as I would hate to see Wendell go, talking about players who are maybe going a little underappreciated and might get drafted later than they should, like I could see myself talking myself into being okay with that if that hypothetical were to happen. And assuming that the Bulls got a really good point guard solution for trading Wendell away.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is if you trade Wendell away, at least you're fixing one problem and you're probably getting a pretty damn good point guard in return. And that's all I can really see the Bulls trying to trade Carter for, is try to upgrade to maybe an all-star type of point guard. Or maybe somebody else comes available and can beef up their front court and accelerate this thing too. And I think you still have some options too. Even if you do draft a guy like Brandon Clark, who you don't really know where he fits. Is he a four? Can he play bigger lineups at the three? Can he play smaller ball lineups at the five? You still have Otto Porter Jr. who can slide from that three to the four. So I think that gives you some versatility there. And we saw some of those lineups last year. I wouldn't count that out either. Here's a couple other names just for you real quick from Priority Sports. Ty Jerome from Virginia. Isaiah Roby from Nebraska. Bruno Fernando from Maryland. Jonte Porter from Missouri. Yeah, so that's the list of names. Those are the guys that are signed with Priority Sports. Oh, here, and two. just as we were talking about our guy, at least my guy, Admiral Schofield is a part of Priority Sports. So I could see him going to the Bulls if he's there at 38.
Yeah, if he's there at 38, that's got Bulls written all over it.
Which I'm cool with. From Illinois, seems like a pretty solid player, and I've talked about him a couple different times now, and we'll get into him in maybe a week or two when we start to talk about second-round picks, but another attachment to Priority Sports is pretty funny. But just to circle back to the draft promise thing and overall, I just hope it doesn't come to a case where we see like 6-7 lottery picks all of a sudden just completely wiping themselves from the NBA combine and leaving early. And I'm not saying that it'll happen next year, but maybe this trend starts to grow and grow a little bit more. Like, the worst thing that could happen for the NBA is 7 to 10 of the top prospects that you think are going to go in the lottery all of a sudden decide, you know what, I'm going to leave the NBA combine early because I've got a promise here. I think it devalues the combine overall. And I know only diehard NBA fans are really, really excited about this, and probably college basketball fans too. I just don't want a trend to all of a sudden start to grow there, where all of a sudden we teams already know who they're going to pick, already giving promises out, and there isn't that surprise element that you were talking about.
Well, and it, I guess, like, the other question is, if so many people start getting draft promises at the onset of the combine, do we lose a significant portion of evaluating these young players? Because if your team is, you know, running their scouting, you know, department the right way, and they're doing a thorough job, they're watching these kids play at the collegiate level, or, you know, even if they're international prospects, sending people to go watch their games overseas, wherever it is that they're playing. So you're doing that job, and it's not all coming down to, all right, let's have a conversation with this kid and let's look at his measurables and watch him, you know, do some scrimmaging and some drills at the combine, and we're going to put all of the weight of our scouting decision and our draft decision into just that. Because we know that it is so much more than just the combine when you're talking about each team and each, you know, executive group and each scouting group coming up with their draft board for draft night next month. But if you eliminate most all of what they do learn at the combine, then, you know, maybe, like, there's no question that in some cases the scouting leading up to the combine that teams have done, and watching these young people play in their college, their college seasons, some decisions have been changed based on what they see at the combine and what they hear from these players at the combine. There's no doubting that. So if all of these draft promises continue to, like, and this trend continues to grow, and it essentially minimizes most of what goes on at the combine, other than saying, okay, so this guy's this many, you know, feet and inches tall with and without shoes. Here's this guy's wingspan. Here's this guy's, you know, standing reach. Here's this guy's vertical leap. And if that's all the combine becomes, because everybody's already figuring out who's getting drafted where before it, then maybe you do lose some element to that.
Yeah, I really just hope that doesn't happen. And we'll find out, I guess, over the next couple of years if that's going to be part of this element. But I just hope for surprise sake, for NBA fans' sake, that that doesn't happen where guys start to get all of these promises. But I guess not. We shouldn't worry about it until it actually happens. And this could just be because of a weird draft where there's only really three significant point guards available. And then after that, most of your point guard situations getting taken in the back end of the 20s or the early 30s in the second round. Matt, before we get to the one prospect we want to talk about today on today's show, I wanted to ask you real quick one other thing. But before we do that, Hotels.com, that's our sponsor for today's show. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. So, Matt, it seems like there's two teams that have some significant interest in Cam Reddish. One being at the Atlanta Hawks. The other we'll talk about in a few days when we actually dive into Cam Reddish a little bit more. But the Atlanta Hawks seem to be very interested in Cam Reddish. What do you think the Bulls could get out of it in terms of maybe blocking the Atlanta Hawks of drafting him by being at number 7 and the Hawks being at number 8? If the Hawks desperately liked Cam Reddish, what do you think the Bulls could squeeze out of them from just moving back one pick? Maybe a second round pick at 35 that they have? Anything else besides that? And do you think the Bulls would pursue something like that if they knew that they could get their guy just by moving back one pick?
Assuming that the Bulls could, like,
say they want, yeah, Kobe White.
So say Kobe White and Reddish are both on the board when the Bulls are up at 7 and the Bulls want to take Kobe White, and mm-hmm. they know Atlanta wants Reddish, so they trade down one spot.
Correct.
I mean, I don't know. Just it depends on how much the Hawks value and want Cam Reddish and how much they covet him, because it's just a second round draft pick, and especially for the fan base of this organization, all the jokes that we make about how they don't value those, maybe the Atlanta Hawks value second round picks more than we do. So moving up just one spot to get that guy, I mean, I find it hard to believe that the Hawks would be willing to part with even something as simple and perhaps insignificant as a second round pick to move up one spot. Obviously, they have their answer at point guard. You know, they're very happy with Trae Young, who had a really strong rookie season, and they have no need for Kobe White. So when you look at the chalk assumption of the fact that, you know, the board will go as it does through 7 to the Bulls and then 8 to the Hawks. Like, maybe they are so disinterested in any of the other, like, scraps that are going to be left around for picks 8, 9, and 10 that they are willing to give up a second-round pick just to move up one spot and be sure that they get their guy in Cam Reddish. I just, you know, I don't know enough about what, you know, the level at which Atlanta loves Cam Reddish as to whether or not they'd be actually willing to give up something like a second-round pick for it. If I'm the Bulls and I have that offer, then absolutely I would do that, especially if that means you can still get yourself Coby White and, you know, take another swing at figuring out the point guard situation.
Yeah, there's a couple interesting things that I was reading about Atlanta specifically, and apparently they really like Cam Reddish and how he can play with Trae Young and Kevin Huerter. So, and if you're talking about, like, second-tier players in the lottery, after Cam Reddish is off the board, you have to pretty much drop down all the way to 13, 14, 15 to get your combo 2-3. And then you're talking about guys like Romeo Langford and Kevin Porter Jr. and even maybe Nickeil Alexander-Walker, but or Nasir Little too. But at that point, I think you're talking about a huge reach for Atlanta if they don't get Cam Reddish. And you end up with, say the Bulls did that and tried to block Atlanta at 7, then the Atlanta Hawks are looking at having to take maybe another point guard who's the best available at 8, or they have to load up in front court depth. And I don't know if that's exactly what they want to do right now. We talked about Atlanta a lot before even the lottery happened, saying like their real missing piece right now is at the 3. And so if they can get Cam Reddish there at 8, I feel like there's two situations the Bulls could make a move here if they really wanted to do that, to get to squeeze a little bit of an asset out of Atlanta. It's either one, Atlanta attaches their 35th pick this year, which right now Tankathon has them drafting Jontae Porter, who I just had mentioned that he was part of a Mark Bartlesen clients, so there's a little connection for you there. Or they could do something like this. The Bulls give them back their 38th pick and Atlanta gives them 35 and 41. So you'd be giving 7 and 38 for 8, 35 and 41 this year.
I mean, that's a fine deal. You know, I would take that. Because it gives the Bulls an additional chance to actually hit on one of the later, you know, second round picks in the draft, as opposed to only having one chance at adding a real player in the second round. So that's, you know, that's totally fine. I'll counter with this hypothetical to you though, Jordan. Say Atlanta really does want Cam Reddish, and the Bulls are at 7, and Coby White and Cam Reddish are on the board. If the Hawks don't make the Bulls an offer to move up one spot to get their guy, or if they make the Bulls an offer and the Bulls think it's not, you know, not all that great, would you also be okay with the Bulls just saying, you know what, I know we need to address our point guard situation, but Coby White is not what we see as being worth the number 7 pick. We'll find a veteran point guard in free agency this offseason, and we'll continue to try and find a young stud point guard as we move through this rebuild. We see a high potential ceiling in Cam Reddish, and we're just going to take Cam Reddish instead. Because after the 2 remaining years on Otto's deal, the Bulls will once again kind of be wondering what the solution is at wing. And Reddish could be that guy. And he could be that guy with a higher ceiling than our other options behind Otto right now, which are essentially Denzel Valentine and last year's, you know, second rookie selection, Chandler Hutchison. Would you be cool with the Bulls taking Cam Reddish over Coby White and saying to the Hawks, thanks, no thanks, we're just going to stick at 7 and take your guy, Cam Reddish?
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea. And I know a lot of people don't think Cam Reddish is going to be anything spectacular. The ceiling isn't really that high on him, but like you were talking about too, and I think about back to Wendell Carter Jr. too, the way we talked about him pre-draft about a month, 2 months, maybe 2.5 months before the actual NBA draft. You know, we talked about him getting overshadowed by Marvin Bagley a lot at Duke, and I feel like the similar situation happened to Cam Reddish. While Cam Reddish didn't play great in stretches for Duke, I feel like, and he even mentioned it too when he was talking to reporters, is feeling like he was overshadowed a little bit and his abilities were overshadowed a little bit just by having Zion and RJ Barrett there. It didn't seem like he was complaining about the idea that he had two really great teammates. Just like, I think my abilities are better, and maybe they were overshadowed at times because I was the third wheel on a really, really incredible Duke team. So I wouldn't hate it.
Well, and it's exactly like the Wendell and Bagley situation last year where, you know, as you were saying, who knows what we could have seen or would have seen from Cam Reddish if he was the guy. Much like Wendell committed to Duke before Marvin Bagley reclassified and made himself eligible, and then Duke went out and got Bagley, Wendell was told by Duke, you're going to be the focal point of our offense, you're going to be the guy. And then things, the situation changed, and Duke had an opportunity to go get Bagley, and they got Bagley. Of the three at Duke this year, Cam Reddish was the first to commit. And then after they got Reddish, they got R.J. Barrett and Zion. So maybe not necessarily to the same extent of Duke telling Reddish, like, yo, we're going to build this team around you this season, but certainly something similar to that. And then the situation changing because Duke, you know, and all of their success recruiting were able to add two other very awesome pieces that, you know, that changed the situation.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Atlanta's team right now, too, and just looking to see if there's any pieces that they'd be willing to part with, like actual players. But there isn't anybody on here significant. I mean, Kent Bazemore, they could get off of that deal by trying to give an asset up. But that really is talking about Atlanta feeling like they are 100% comfortable and confident that they could sign a legit player in free agency by opening up that amount of salary cap. So at $19.2 million, and he's off the books after that. But, I mean, we heard the Bulls reject a similar deal just a year ago where Atlanta said, if you guys want to move up, you got to take Kent Bazemore in order to do that. And while that was 2 years last year, now he's just on an expiring deal. But outside of that, like, there's nobody else. I know that they shopped Taurean Prince a little bit and mentioned that he could be involved in trades too, but I just don't see anything else that they could trade. So it would have to be, if the Bulls wanted to plug Atlanta at eight, it would have to be a situation where you're getting like a second round pick or something back. But if it's the Bulls and they really like Coby White outside of Cam Reddish and want to make a deal like that, I think that there's a place where they could squeeze another asset out of there. And if it's just a fact that they like Cam Reddish better than they like Coby White, I don't think I'd be all that angry about it. Because right now at seven, really, it's just a crapshoot at this point. Do you take the third best point guard in this draft? Or do you take the third to fourth best combo wing in this draft? I mean, it's kind of roll the dice and see what happens at this
point. And if what we've heard from Paxton recently is true and he's not just BSing, this might be a situation where going against the common theme of we're going to take best available regardless of position, Paxton has been kind of hinting at the fact that this year, perhaps more so than any other year in recent past, if there is not a huge gap in overall talent and overall ceiling and what they deem to be their draft board of best available, if there's not a big gap in total value between, say, a guy who is not at their position of either point guard and, say, one who is, that they might lean towards drafting for need this year more so than in years past. So, you know, take that as the contextual clue that it is. If the Bulls have a situation where they can take Cam Reddish, the third, you know, as you said, suggested, the third best, you know, combo wing versus the third best point guard, it sounds like they might go with the third best point guard because they're going to lean towards need more so than in recent.
It's kind
drafts.
Of crazy that out of any draft of the last 2 years, that they're going to choose this draft to go need over. Yeah, they're going to go need over best player available. I just find that very strange.
But I mean, at the same time, yeah, it's strange because it's going against what we know about them, but also, like, we were talking about the Bulls' history and the point guard carousel over the years since Derrick Rose, his injury, his downfall, and his eventual departure, and how bad those numbers are. You remember those numbers I rattled off to you last week about the average stats for the collection of starting point guards that this Bulls squad has had over the last three seasons and how laughably bad it is? When you look at that, to me, it is not a bad thing for John Paxson to say, look, we know, and it goes back to the Chris Dunn conversation and what they're going to do in free agency and all of that. But for this particular draft class to say, we have to address the point guard situation because it has not been good. I don't have any problem with that. If they see a very minimal difference in overall potential and think that Cam Reddish might be a higher ceiling player or a better player right now than Kobe White is, but they say that that difference is not so great that they can't still justify taking a point guard because this team so freaking desperately needs a point guard, then I don't have a problem.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think I do either. Because like we were saying, everybody at seven at this point, I think, is on a even playing field. I mean, maybe Cam Reddish and Kobe White have a little bit of an up on everybody else that's available there. But yeah, the only thing that bothers me too is at seven, I don't think Kobe White can come in and start right away. So you're still going to have to go out and get a stopgap veteran point guard to start for your team and then learn to develop Kobe White over some time. He's not like a guy like Darius Garland or even Ja Morant who you can plug and play right away. And maybe even Darius Garland you can't do that right away with. So Ja Morant's really the only guy that you can plug into the starting role right away and just kind of let him figure things out. And that was kind of what we did with Wendell too. I mean, they let him figure things out. Obviously Wendell's ceiling being way higher than guys that are going to be available for the Bulls now, but there's still going to be a place and a need for a veteran point guard to come in and start right away, regardless if they do take Kobe White. And for Cam Reddish, if they took Cam Reddish at seven, he would be plugged in right behind Chandler Hutchison. He'd be part of that bench unit right away because obviously Otto Porter fills in the three and Zach LaVine at the two. So I hear what you're saying, and I get it. Like, if they really desperately want to draft a point guard, then it's going to probably be Kobe White at seven. So I guess we'll have to find out. Before we wrap up the show, I want to talk about one prospect in particular, though. Just kind of running through some names, and we'll get to the more important guys, the more realistic guys in terms of who the Bulls will be interested later in the weeks coming. I want to talk specifically about each prospect, one per episode. So we're going to start with Texas's center, Jackson Hayes. So, Matt, watching film on Jackson Hayes, kid is really athletic, really aggressive in the paint, can dunk like no other, and he is a ridiculous shot blocker. For me, we talk about Jackson Hayes because there's one scenario which could play out is the Bulls end up with an enticing offer for an upgrade for Wendell Carter Jr., and they've got to package him away. So maybe Jackson Hayes would be a guy to fill that role should the Bulls decide to upgrade and package Wendell Carter Jr. in a trade this summer. What were your overall thoughts about Jackson Hayes as you kind of watched some film on
him? Yeah, so I watched some Jackson Hayes film this weekend, and I really like him as a kind of traditional big man. In 1 year at Texas, the kid impressed greatly. I mean, not only was he a Big 12 all freshman, but he was Big 12 all defense. He was all Big 12, and he was the Big 12 rookie of the year. And I mean, rightly so, when you look at some of this kid's stats. Per 100 possessions, he had an offensive rating of 138.7 and a defensive rating of 95.6. Per 100 possessions, 5.7 blocks. True shooting percentage, 73.9. This kid's actual field goal percentage over the entire season was 72.8. And as you suggested, a lot of that is the dude just dunking because there is that hole to his game offensively, which is he can't shoot. He cannot shoot. And I know Bulls fans were disappointed with the lack of three-point shooting we saw from Wendell after watching his lone season at Duke and saying, hey, this kid shot 40%. He didn't shoot a lot of them, but he shot 40% or he made 40% of his threes at Duke. And let's see if he can expand that to the NBA level and hit some threes behind the NBA three-point line. We saw some of it, but we didn't see a lot of it. But at least there's that potential with Wendell to be a floor-stretching five playing alongside Markkanen, who is also a seven-footer who can shoot threes and do so very efficiently. There is none of that with Jackson Hayes. So he's kind of a more traditional big man in the sense of, like, you can play him very effectively in the screen and roll game. And he is a great rim protector, but it kind of the buck stops there. You know, he doesn't have the potential to develop those other elements to his game where some collegiate players, especially bigs, you can look and say they might be able to develop, a shot. They might be able to develop a 3-point game at some point over the course of their NBA career. We kind of talked in a recent episode about how some of the, bigs of the previous generation who were still kind of playing, but in the back ends of their career, players like Al Horford, players like Brook Lopez, who had a recent playoff game where he was just raining threes. I don't see that potential with Jackson Hayes. So that's kind of the downside to him.
Yeah, I think what you were talking about with his, in terms of his shooting, I think that's going to be the biggest, that's the biggest weakness of his game outside of anything. I'm just looking at his box score numbers. Throughout the last month of the season or so, it seems like he wasn't as involved in the offense as he was maybe earlier on in the season and like midway through their season when he was sort of a focal point. But the thing was with him is, like you had mentioned, he doesn't really have a clean jump shot. He uses a lot of that right hook, and just going back and watching film, that right hook is nasty around the rim, 3 to 6 feet from the rim, and his ability to catch lobs and dunk is tremendous. That's something that we didn't see too often with Markkanen or Carter this season. But a guy that can come up and catch lobs, I think the most important part is who's throwing those lobs. And we saw Otto Porter be able to throw those.
And the Bulls didn't have anybody competent to do that.
Yeah. They didn't have a point guard, especially, to be able to do that. I mean, once Otto Porter came in, we saw a few more lobs, like to Zach LaVine and to a few other guys, but still not enough. And it's a guy that can stretch the floor and run, and his shot blocking ability is insane. Absolutely insane. Averaged over 2 blocks a game at Texas in his rookie year. The thing, though, I keep going back to is he didn't shoot a single three his entire freshman year at Texas. So that's a little bit worrisome if you don't have a big man, a five, that can stretch the floor and step out to the perimeter and shoot threes. Isn't it funny, though, to look at those offensive defensive ratings in college? It's just absolutely absurd. Some of the O ratings and D ratings in college just get absolutely bonkers. But the other thing that too, that I had noticed about Jackson Hayes that makes sense in terms of why the Bulls would be interested in him if they do move Carter, if that is a situation that plays out, is the fact that he plays defense first. I mean, Big 12 all defense, Big 12 rookie of the year, Big 12 all freshman, and Big 12 all Big 12, first team all Big 12. To me, he's a defense-first guy. He's a shot blocker, rim protector, and that's sort of what the Bulls have been looking for. And I think the false thing here is looking at his two-point field goal percentage and saying like 72.8% for him, yeah, but most of those came on lob dunks or short hook shots close to the rim. And he didn't take all that many shots per game throughout his season either. So There's some advantages and disadvantages to Jackson Hayes' game, and I know Gar Forman has been at a handful of Texas games this year watching him, so I think there's some good things to develop here, but he doesn't get me as excited as I was about guys like Jared Allen a few years ago.
I was just going to ask you, like, do you think, speaking of Texas bigs in recent drafts, would you say that Jackson Hayes' NBA ceiling is higher or lower than Jared Allen's?
I think at this point, Jared Allen probably had a higher ceiling, even though he went mid-teens in the draft. I mean, we see what he's being able to do with the Nets now. The dude could jump out of the gym. He had more athleticism than I think Jackson Hayes does coming in, a little bit more length, too. And even throw Miles Turner in there from a few years ago. Miles Turner was another big that came out of Texas. And I think I was a little bit more excited about Miles Turner's game than I was about Jared Allen. And now I'm a little bit more excited about Jared Allen's game than I am about this rookie coming out of Texas and Jackson Hayes. So, I mean, there's some differences here that you can go through, but I think the biggest thing is the Bulls need offense and need guys that can stretch the floor. And if he can't shoot threes, the shot blocking is great, but I think that kind of cancels things out, right? Unless you're getting something overwhelming for Wendell, then I'm all right taking Jackson Hayes.
And I mean, you know, the comparisons of, wow, well, you know, Jared Allen fell all the way to 22. That 2017 draft class was pretty freaking stacked.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you go back and say, all right, well, if you redid the 2017 draft class, a lot of Bulls fans and a lot of people, across the NBA would say, all right, well, Markkanen's clearly going to go, earlier than 7. He might go top 3. You could probably say that if they redid that 2017 draft, Jared Allen would go higher than 22. I don't know about like. A lot higher. I don't think he goes top 10. He probably still doesn't even go top 15, but it might be close. Whereas like this year, Jackson Hayes might sneak into the top 10, even if, you know, I think we're kind of in agreement that maybe right now we would say his NBA ceiling is a little lower than what Jared Allen's is, especially after the season that we just saw Jared Allen play in Brooklyn. the draft class is different this year. And they're, you know, there are going to be teams who see his, you know, his athletic, you know, skill set and what he did at Texas this year and what he did very efficiently and say, it's okay that he can't shoot. We just need a big who's going to, you know, protect the rim, be a shot blocker, who can play the pick and roll game very efficiently and can be a great, you know, target for looks at the rim. And as you said, also has, you know, a pretty traditional little, like, you know, offensive game around the hoop, competent hook shot. You don't really see many players using that anymore these days, but he's got it. And when it comes to, you know, these hypothetical situations where maybe the Bulls use Wendell as trade bait to get a point guard and then need to readdress their front court and look at a guy like Hayes, what you said about, you know, his defense first kind of playing, I think that, you know, should not go overlooked because of who we know John Paxson to be, who we know Jim Boylan to be, and the fact that this past season, or really the past couple of seasons, we, you know, year one of the rebuild was going to be bad regardless. We all knew that. But again, when the Bulls were hoping to be a bit more competitive this season, their defense was awful. Awful. You know, like the one part of the season where they actually looked pretty competent, they did so on the offensive end, and their defense was still in that stretch of solid basketball in February when they got Otto. Their defense was still atrocious. So knowing that and knowing that John Paxson is still a very old-fashioned guy who values the grit and grind defense, the guy, you know, who, you know, we saw Tom Thibodeau become one of the best and most respected coaches in the league because of what he did for the Bulls as a defensively dominant team. We still see the importance of defense in the playoffs when the Warriors really want to clamp down defensively and close out the Rockets. When the Warriors really clamped down defensively and just stole game two from the Blazers a few days ago. Defense still matters, and Paxson believes that more than anybody. So if the Bulls are to, you know, make some big surprise move, it would not be a huge surprise to me to see them take a defense first player, like you suggested.
Just looking over the top 10 rankings across all stats in the NCAA this season, and just kind of looking to see where Jackson Hayes stacks up in some of these categories we were talking about where he was first in the Big 12. The one specifically I'm looking at is true shooting percentage. He was number one at 73.9%. Some of the other guys on that list, a lot of them are coming from really small schools, but Zion Williamson was fourth on that list at 70.2. Obviously, Zion's is going to be a little bit lower because he was willing to take three-point shots, whereas Jackson Hayes was not. Another one, effective field goal percentage, he was not listed in the top 10, but somebody that keeps coming up in all of these, Matt, and I'm excited to talk about him later in this week, is Brandon Clark. Brandon Clark's second in effective field goal percentage in the entire NCAA, second in player efficiency rating. He was first in blocks this year at 117 blocks. I mean, we're talking about Jackson Hayes, 71 blocks, but Brandon Clark had 117 with Gonzaga this year. And obviously, too, the competition level that Gonzaga was playing all season long is obviously different than Texas playing in the Big 12. But another one, Brandon Clark at field goal percentage, 68.7, was the best among anybody in the NCAA this year. And Zion Williamson coming in at number two at 68%. So, somebody to think about too, as we were kind of just looking across the board for Jackson Hayes, but I wouldn't mind it. I think I would be a little bit skeptical in terms of the offensive ceiling that Jackson Hayes has. But like you were mentioning too, is the defense is incredible, and the shot blocking is something we haven't seen since. Who's the last center that the Bulls have had that has been a truly dominant shot-blocking center? Joakim Noah? And I don't even think he was a super, super dominant shot-blocking center. Like, he was good, but I don't think he was dominant.
I mean, he was really... I mean, like, he had games where he would, you know, compile 5 blocks, 6 blocks, 7 blocks. And, like, not that he was just, like, this incredibly gifted athlete who was just leaping and stuffing guys at the rim, but with Joakim, it was more so the consistent 150% effort that led to him, you know, just thinking back to some of his plays where he would get multiple blocks on one possession, you know, where it was, you know, block a shot, offensive player gets the rebound, Joakim goes up and blocks a shot again, blocks a shot. Like, in that sense, he, I think, was probably the most talented and most valuable rim protector the Bulls have had in recent memory just because of his continued perseverance and tenacity as a rim protector, not necessarily because of his skill as a shot blocking big. But I mean, nobody else comes to mind recently when you think about the Bulls' best rim protecting big. It's Joakim. Like, I like who's second behind him? I don't know. It's not close.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just looking at Joakim's numbers with the Bulls.
I mean, other recent bigs that were actually competent for the Bulls, as far as just like we're good players. I mean, Pau was a laughing stock at the defensive end. The dude was true. The antithesis of a rim protector.
And same thing with Carlos Boozer, too. Man, you would be, I mean, the Bulls fans would be excited if you get that guy to play on the other side of the ball once in a while and play some defense. But just looking at Joakim Noah's numbers, 2008, 2009, he had 110 blocks. That was best for 14th in the league. 2009, 2010, 100 blocks for 19th in the league. 2011, 2012, 92 at 15th in the league. 2012, 2013 was 141, and he was tied for 9th in the NBA in blocks. In 2013, 2014, he had 121 blocks, and that was best for 9th. So maybe Joakim was a really good shot blocker. He was top 10 in the NBA for two seasons and top 20 in the NBA for five seasons while he played for the Bulls. So I think that's the guy that we're pegging here, is the last rim protector truly that the Bulls have had that has been consistent is Joakim Noah, and we're talking about that 5 years ago. So it'd be nice to get a prospect in here if you do move Wendell, who is also a really good shot blocker and rim protector, securing yourself with another one like that. But we're talking about this in terms of upgrades too with trading Wendell, and you really have to get a really, really, really solid return for Wendell if you're going to make that move. So
right, that, I mean, because to me that's the thing that puts it all in perspective. If we're talking about replacing Wendell and looking at some of the bigs in this draft class, you know, does Jackson Hayes have what it takes to really be a dominant rim protecting big in the league, and is he worth taking it at 8 or, you know, whatever, or beyond that if the Bulls trade down even farther? It all goes back to, well, why are you doing this? Well, you're giving up Wendell because you need to give up Wendell to answer the bigger, more pressing problem, which is, for the love of God, this team needs a point guard. So as much as you say, it's important that the Bulls improve defensively next year. They can't lose Wendell without finding a replacement who can be, as much as we all believe Wendell could be right now, a dominant rim-protecting big. Why are we doing all of this? Again, context. Because we fucking need a point.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, just thinking about this scenario, say they do move Wendell for a really good point guard, all-star type of level point guard. I think it throws a little bit of a wrench into terms of what your front court's going to look like, because you can't start Jackson Hayes right away. If the Bulls are trying to be competitive next year and actually win some games and be fun and have decent chemistry, you can't start that kid right away. Like, I think that would be a disaster. Look at what happened to Wendell in the first 44 games of his season. I mean, he struggled. He struggled at times.
Yeah, he averaged 44 fouls a game.
Yeah, that too. He was saving his teammates. So I think that, in itself, if you do make a move like that, then you're talking about having to bring a guy like Robin Lopez back to be able to fill that starter role while you kind of develop Jackson Hayes off the bench with your second unit. So I think that there's other moves on top of that.
Or you start small ball and the Bulls actually follow up on all this talk about seeing Lowry as their five.
True.
You know, if in this hypothetical they move Wendell off and get a young, you know, they take Hayes, but they don't feel like he's ready to start. And then you play Otto at your four, you play super small ball.
That is true. And yeah, you play, what would you do? Lowry at the five, Otto at the four, Chandler Hutchison at the three, Zach LaVine, and then whoever you get as your point guard in that trade.
Right. Or, you know, the other name, Denzel, at least for one more year.
Zell. That's true. Yeah, you could play. That would be a weird lineup. Think about that. You're also like borderline all-star point guard, Denzel Valentine, Zach LaVine, Otto Porter Jr., and Lauri Markkanen. That would be a strange starting five.
That'd be
a
weird.
Very strange starting five.
That would be very strange. And we also know that as much as we talk about Lauri showing us more and having more potential to be, you know, defensively at least a net zero, if not a net positive, you know, we all thought he would be a giant net negative defensively, and he's not as bad as we feared. But he's still, I mean, talking about asking Lowry to be, while, you know, you're figuring out your young center of the future, to be a rim-protecting five? I see that going very poorly.
Yeah, me too. I mean, unless the Bulls are going to put up 135 points a game, yeah, that might not end well. I mean, that was the biggest weaknesses with Markkanen's game is his defense, and at times being aggressive. Like, an aggressiveness doesn't just translate to the offensive side of the ball. It goes to the defense side of the ball, too. And I could just see a situation where Lowry gets into a lot of foul trouble more than he has before, just by having to play that rim-protecting guy at the number five position. So, yeah, I think in context throughout all of this, we're talking about Jackson Hayes specifically because the Bulls have scouted him throughout the season, and this would be a scenario in which the Bulls could upgrade significantly and they would have to trade away Wendell Carter Jr. And that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to draft a center at the position, but he's probably your best option here in the lottery if you are able to keep that number seven pick. So yeah, it's just, we're having conversations about all of these prospects and scenarios if the Bulls are seriously truly interested in why that would happen and the scenarios that would play out. We're not saying that we love Jackson Hayes and that should be the guy that the Bulls pick and keep Wendell Carter Jr. So just a little context for people who are listening to this and wondering, why the hell are you guys talking about Jackson Hayes? Like, is he even in consideration? Well, he could be. I mean, like you had said, Matt, earlier on in this episode, is that Paxson said that we're going to evaluate a lot of other prospects besides just who we liked initially at number four. So this could be a scenario where they bring in a plethora of different positions and take a look to see who could be the best fit for them.
Yeah. You know, obviously a lot of these different hypotheticals we'll break down and talk about over the next month or so. Today's the 20th, right? So we're officially 1 month away exactly from NBA draft night. So
Correct.
We've got a month to talk about all these Correct. Hypothetical situations, and who knows what other information we'll hear about other things that come out of the, you know, the combine that took place in Chicago. It sounded like the Bulls had a couple other workouts planned for a handful of players that are happening today. We'll see what comes from that. But, you know, you got to be prepared and you know, the best way to prepare yourself for any outcome is to talk about all possible outcomes. So, you know, is it the most likely scenario that the Bulls trade Wendell for a point guard and draft Jackson Hayes? No, but like you said, it's on the table. So you might as well talk about all these possibilities because, hey, let's be real. That's like half the fun of being in this phase of the NBA season as a fan whose team is no longer playing. And, you know, enjoy watching these conference finals, everybody. But for us Bulls fans, what, you know, what is the most important thing that happens next? Well, the most important thing that happens next is how this team changes on draft night. And that could just be as simple as the Bulls stay at seven and take a pick, and we'll discuss who that pick is. But we've seen this team be pretty active on draft night leading up to draft night in recent seasons. So got to be ready for it.
That is true. Speaking of the conference finals real fast, I was very excited at times watching Malcolm Brogdon, and I was like, damn, he might be actually worth the money at stretches of the game, even just yesterday, watching Bucks and Raptors go into double OT. And then he made a couple pretty big mistakes in overtime, and I was like, ooh, if we get to a situation where we need a guy to be clutch, you make a couple mistakes, and look, he had Kawhi Leonard on him, and that steal that Kawhi had in the second overtime was absolutely massive. But I liked what I've been seeing from Malcolm Brogdon throughout these playoffs, even regardless of what we saw yesterday in stretches and overtime. So I'm quickly getting more and more excited about the idea of Malcolm Brogdon, Matt. I just thought I'd let you know that.
Yeah, no, I love Brogdon, and I'm the opposite. I'm trying to not let myself get excited about him because I think if he had missed these playoffs with that injury, maybe his price and his stock would have fallen a bit and people would have forgotten. Not forgotten entirely, but just maybe forgotten about his value. The fact that he's come back and the fact that the Bucks look like a team on their way to the finals, even despite dropping that game in double OT last night, Brogdon's going to be too expensive for us, I think.
Yeah, and I think even in this situation, too, Milwaukee can bring him back no matter what the price limit is, too. Like, they can go into the luxury and be able to sign him back and also sign Chris Middleton back, too. So that was the one sticking point that I had, is if they have to sign Chris Middleton to a max, are they going to be willing to go up somewhere around Eric Bledsoe money in order to retain Malcolm Brogdon on top of that? Especially because you have George Hill still on the books, and I think like $18 million next year. So you're talking about paying close to 40, if not more than 40 million for your point guard position next year, which I think is kind of crazy for the Bucks, but yeah, outside of the Bucks, though, there's going to be plenty of other teams that are going to be interested in a 26-year-old that could come in, shoot the three, and fill that point guard position. So I don't know. I'm with you too. I don't want to get myself too excited, but everything that I'm seeing from him in this playoff has been a whole lot of fun to watch. So I think if the Bulls pursue him, I would not be mad one bit about that.
No,
but
not at all. You know, I would very much like that, but tempering expectations.
Yeah, that's a good call. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again to our sponsors for today's show, Hotels.com, Untuckit, and Grip 6 Belts. Check out all of the exclusive promos that we have going on with those three companies, Hotels.com, Untuckit, and Grip 6 Belts. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line. You got some thoughts on Jackson Hayes or anything else we talked about? A possible move for Cam Reddish to block the Hawks? Any other scenarios that you guys think could possibly play out for the Bulls leading into the NBA draft? We'd love to hear from you. So hit us up at 331-979-1369. Your voicemails, your text messages. We'll get to all of those on Wednesday's show. But that's going to about do it here, Bulls Nation. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, we will be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com